My name is Jake Leadingham, and I'm running for Spokane School District Director, position number three.
And the first one, any candidate I interview, whether it be for school board or city council, my first question is always, just tell me a little bit about yourself and why you're running.
I was born in Grand Coulee Dam, Washington. I grew up there, K through 12, and a little small community. I went to Central Washington University and decided down a path of I was always interested in science and the human condition. So I majored in I have a bachelor's degree in psychology and anthropology, and we were able to put together a program there. They kind of double major. That feels like ages ago, because I guess it kind of was. I graduated in 2003. I went and I was looking for AmeriCorps programs after that, and I got into education kind of like right off the bat. I was looking, just kind of in that position, where do you do after college? And there's kind of a sense of optimism, I guess cautious optimism during a heating up, during the Iraq and Afghanistan conflicts. But we were coming with increased budgets, I think, to some of our service programs, and so I really wanted to get to education. I wanted to see what was out there, and I worked in a so I got part of the Washington Reading Corps, which was like, it was kind of works you filter down through the kind of the government branches, and then it gets to allocation of nonprofits and things like that. So that we worked directly in schools. I tutored the reading program, pretty comprehensive, and with low struggling first and second graders, and kind of built a year there, getting to know everyone in the community. This was in the Highline School District, Seattle, right outside of SeaTac, and it was great. It was a really wonderful experience, to kind of start off your post conclusion career and kind of just meet so many people. To just met many people are passionate about that, and just the coming from all over the country, and you just so immediately you're meeting lots of more diverse people and working with students who are struggling and who are from a variety of backgrounds. That is a very I think it was something like 70 something languages spoken throughout the district, of course, in that school. Some of my students were Somali, and of course, Hispanics. So there's this big, we're kind of like working in conjunction to the ESL program. Kind of, we're kind of a sidebar, as of volunteers, and we also, my partner and I, we because we're kind of in pairs, we put together. So it's kind of a comprehensive program of doing, working directly in the school, and then, with students 4 days a week, and then as well as our responsibilities for putting on. I think. It was like two big literacy nights, so raising more funds to put together this kind of elementary program there, for just the family involvement.
And
And
was this all with AmeriCorps?
yes, yeah,
Okay.
this was I want to say, I keep saying back in the day. If I say that a lot, I apologize, because things feel like that. AmeriCorps was it consists of loose then like, of a sprawling network of different types of programs, of familiar things like this original Civilian Conservation Corps and things like that. And then there's the VISTA program too, which I did at the end of that term. Then I was when that ended, because those are kind of like, it's kind of considered volunteer service, but I was always kind of geared towards that. And then I just I think I was then I was looking for the reason to get out of the country. I also explored thinking about the Peace Corps at that time, and I kind of I instead went with another domestic program. So I went with another AmeriCorps program down in, and I got hired for this new nonprofit that was at the time the startup, that was aimed at getting, now this time on the other end of the spectrum, education, is working with 11 and 12 year olds. And this was really was like a venture, I'll say a venture nonprofit, because the woman who started it, she was we're building the organization. We were like the first kind of second wave, of just a five-person
It's a
staff
grand reopening.
of us volunteers, and then like a couple full time with a program that's now called College Forward down in Austin, Texas. So we worked began just one school there. It really was just us figuring things out as we went, but also working directly, in terms of I was building a volunteer program, something I didn't know how to do at 23, 24 years old. But we just use our best resources, and then the best part, of course, again, was getting to know a lot of the students, and seeing how, because it was kind of a this program was a lot different. This is something they worked on getting grant money and fundraising.
And so I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I guess how long were you doing nonprofit slash AmeriCorps things, and what do you do now?
So that first program, that was altogether about 2 years. There was two separate programs, and after that, I stayed. I think living in Austin for a long time, and for several years, I worked in the retail industry and met a lot. We're kind of working with costumes and a lot of artists, and just a lot of creative people. I moved back to Washington in 2013, and kind of started on a different path. So it was that's when I work now at this company. I'm an analyst and writer with NG Impact. They're doing or I'm a resource kind of a data accounts manager there. We work in it's in the end in the energy industry with the home, kind of homegrown Spokane company there, and so it's a lot of analyst work and a lot of numbers and partial accounting. So and then I also have my service. I joined the like I said like the Washington the Army National Guard. So 2013, I'm still serving up that
No
commitment.
way. And why did you want to run for school board?
It was a tough decision, but it was ultimately fear, I think, and like a motivation to pump the brakes, really of kind of our racial unrest, and to to kind of see where we're at there. And I might see things a lot differently than others. I'm maybe not. There's might be a spectrum, but I was, I guess, somewhat ironically, I was the Democratic Party started contacting and looking for bodies, and so the several months ago. So I didn't really take it seriously at the time. I was like, maybe run, but then I just started reading more and more about what the kind of critical social justice movement is doing, and what it really entails, and kind of and how others are kind of jumping on board. And I just thought we have to. So I looked at last year's resolution, and seeing that it was passed only 10 days after George Floyd's murder, and it was or I would say 10 to 14. I think the date was by June 10th, 2020. I thought it was a pretty rushed decision, and to me, it's something that just needs some quick a back to the drawing board sort of thing.
Which I guess that gets to my first question, which is in relation to the resolution that is something they passed last year. They all supported it, and it really takes a look at culturally competent training and looking at things with an equity lens. I mean, do you support that? And if not, why? Or are there some sort of missed, maybe some gaps in it?
So I don't support what is currently understood, and actually I might understand that differently because I've been diving into some of the literature of it, some of a little bit of the original even source material. I'm talking like the postmodernist literature, which and the neo-Marxist, Herbert Marcuse. And before I start going off on that, but there's people may be saying, what is he talking about? It's just we're bringing It has nothing to do with any of that. Well, we are a lot of this, whatever, however got here today, like to me, it's kind of distilled, and it's if it's something is sweeping, across the nation like that, that should stop, make people pause. I think what is really why everyone is probably in a place where they really want to do the right thing, especially educators, and we're just we won't beat around it, but like especially liberal-minded, or liberal progressive-minded, and which I've always been, left to center, and but this is so far we may hear what you hear nationally just is I, someone hears only hears someone complaining about it on Fox News. That's diagnosing, I think, some of the problem of our media landscape, and the ability to kind of talk about some of these issues, really honestly. So I think what the concept of the equity part is really not what people think it is. And I don't know, again, you're gonna call it by different names, diversity, equity, inclusion. These sound like great things, but some of the things the social justice and critical theory literature, the hallmarks of it are kind of obfuscating language, and it kind of plays on certain aspects of taking things that used to be known, and by linguistic and kind of knowledge standards, and kind of just trying to turning things on its head and expecting and kind of declaring itself, kind of philosopher king, and that is a known truth. That's more broadly speaking to some of these things. And again, I don't oppose like a sweeping brush because of and throwing the baby out with the bathwater because we have real problems to solve. I look at these as problems, but so if we have class inequities, we have programs that we need to get back to the drawing board on. We need to fill the gaps, economically, education wise, and a curriculum. We I think we just have to be smart about that, and if you do not do it in kind of what amounts what is the closest equivalent to maybe sort of a societal wide PTSD, I should say. In terms of kind of sweeping, because how many times did you hear? I mean, how many people heard of the critical race theory after, like, up until I don't know, like maybe 6 to 8 months ago? It started trickling out, but then not really gaining, of course, our known state that it is now. And make no mistake, like most of those policies are grounded in that.
I guess, having teachers take culturally competent training so they understand how to appropriately, address the needs of students with different backgrounds. How is that related in any way to critical race theory, which is a sort of an academic concept to this, as a school board member, it's making sure everyone has the needs for their unique situations, and sometimes race is, people have different advantages or disadvantages related to their race or their language or those types of things.
We do. However, what theory will say, broadly and critical theory, and this is how much in the weeds you can save this conversation from going because, but I it is based on that. And what it means is, you label something that like culturally competent things, but what the truth that it's based off of, what it assumes itself to be truth, and that these are not evidence-based. There's that word that we threw around, and pushed, we always pushed against the right on, or I should say Democrats, not we, but evidence-based. It's a long slog to get to really learn where we got today, but we can do it in you can get you can get caught up to speed, I think. Just you can get a crash course in some of the stuff, and that's through, I urge everyone to get to New Discourses podcast, newdiscourses.com, and this is just to open up today, because most they are some of the James Lindsay and his colleagues are the only people doing this, and really, and it's not just being critical of it, it's opening up dialogue for that. But very, I think that's kind of where we're at there too. It, to me, I had no idea what they're talking about, but you got to get to kind of really understand what it's based off of. And some of those things just assert one thing, or they say that these cultural competency training might rely on is something like all these those hot button terms like white privilege. These are asserted as known truths, you know, and that there's not quite objective reality, except for, you know, when it comes to intersectionality. So these things, there's so much to kind of pour through, but that's why I have to urge listeners to learn where this is coming from, and how it got here. That's probably another something that historians will pick over, you know, 30, 40 years from now.
And is that the primary reason? Like, I guess I'm, because you mentioned this, and when I asked you why you're running for school board, is it that you have an issue with there is the talk of equity? Or I guess I'm, where is this the primary reason, or is there other reasons with just like the school budget or what they're spending their money on, or is it just the these equity discussions are something that needs to be addressed?
Mostly that the latter there, and but I think those are going to be those are your the former point you mentioned was they're not unrelated. I have to get back on and picture and see if there's the budgetary expenses there. They the resolution, you know, back then when they passed it mentioned well they're going to do an approximation of cost, so that's another thing. Like we don't know where this, how much time this takes up, how much time, what does it mean? So you're going to build a curriculum based off some of the activist literature, the ones that have kind of sat in academia, and then you know now it's kind of like a break glass in case of emergency sort of apply. Well, I am completely sort of measured and looking for a reasoned response for our problems. We need an evidence base. And I don't know what happened. Like people suddenly thought like that doesn't exist or that this is the one answer. And like such as there are such things as evidence base, you know, from the psychological and the clinical psychology and literature for like anti-bias trainings and diversity trainings. Just takes some courage to kind of look through there and to and some skepticism of, you know, in the best sense of the word, and that is like, you know, just critically thinking. So.
All right, and I guess, you know, the other questions I had related to, you know, school board races is there is the technology access issues going into the future, as in, you know, I think this year was pretty illuminating in that there was a lot of kids that lacked what they needed as far as access to internet, for example, to be successful this past year, and being able to use internet to do your homework is, you know, outside of a pandemic, is something that you that kids still need. And going forward, you know, is there something that you would maybe do as a school board member to make sure that, you know, every kid has access to the basic, you know, internet or support to be successful going forward after the pandemic?
Yes. Well, one, I think use what muscle we do have as school members, as parents, as to kind of keep our to get utilities of the internet service, make you know considered it, public utility. We need to get that affordable, so there's and high speed enough. Also, I feel like there's more than enough resources to get computer labs in there, so maybe perhaps we have there's a hybrid program of getting students who aren't able to be supervised at home and they don't have internet access to get them into just a a facility that, high technology facility the school district has, in classrooms, so they can work there. And again, some of these ideas, I think they're all new to a lot of us, and we're all kind of struggling to find some of those. I think those are some of the best ideas, I think, off the top of my head. I'm willing to look at the money and focus that and look at all the different factors that go into the child care and put the money where it's needed. So that kind of comes back to like every dime that's spent on critical social justice and diversity equity programs is a dollar wasted.
Sorry, can you repeat that?
I said every dollar spent on critical social justice and cultural competence, if it's based on these theories, on critical theory and the equity programs, they are products of that. And every dollar spent on that is a dollar wasted.
So don't spend any money on things that lead to racial equity.
No, not in how what they're doing now and what it's based off. What if racial equity is just this new thing that we've accepted that it has to be conquered? First of all, where is it measured? How are we measuring? Remember those SMART goals you might have learned it like in I've learned that at a job in school and specific, measurable, attainable, realistic. I think I forget the T, but we another thing of this, what how are we measuring progress in equity? Do we have what data is even the numbers is the concept and the programming based off of? So, as I understand it, critical race theory was built upon prior critical theory. It actually has its roots in the 1930s, kind of with and then several with certain prominent neo-Marxists, and it's quite different than some of the others. As we built through the ages, it kind of sealed the deal with critical race theory being built on the tenets of that there's privilege and that powers systemic power is everywhere, that it's and that it's built into the system, it's built into our social system, and that everything we can't know anything about the world really because it defies and rejects partially objective knowledge. So it builds on the fact that everyone is in conflict, that everyone and solely on skin color, essentially, and that everyone is always locked in a system of oppression versus power, and power and knowledge are also kind of two sides of the same coin in critical race theory.
And so, how does this relate to, what's happening at Spokane Public Schools right now? Because I get that they have a resolution looking at racial equity, and I do think there is some privilege components to it. But it's true in Spokane that there have been some racial inequities. It was in my grandparents' lifetime that redlining in Spokane was a thing, and what school you go to was based on if, what the racial demographic of your household is where you're allowed to live, which led to what school you're allowed to go to. And so I think there is a, I mean, there is racial inequity in Spokane. That is a fact that there are things. So I guess what, how does that relate to what the school board is doing? Because this is a very philosophical con, but that, I mean, they have had discussions about that. I listen to school board and they don't really go into philosophical history or talk about Marxism at all.
That's the problem. So this is the thing, right? And they not that they have time for this, but it's if you have maybe for my English teachers out there, for my aunt is one of them in another state, but I have a passion for this. Like if you have for literature, and science, and we need to use both sides of those ability to read, to read through our the history of what of where this came from. So the what we're not denying is that there's inequity, there's inequality, but that they're trying to use them now in, when I say, the terms are now trying to become interchangeable, or they're trying to do away with equality in a way, because pushing back against the equity policies is not pushing back against, not pushing back against progress or equality. Because in fact, some of the critical social, critical, specifically critical race theory texts, they say they seek to undo the order so far. They do not, they wish to, they think that the tools of liberalism have failed, and that is where these policies are coming from. It's not that we have we don't have class differences, we don't have racial differences. It's that it asserts a truth that it, the cause of that and virtually every difference in our world is racism. It's like, so it's now turning racism into the sort of like poltergeist spiritual entity. Where is it? You can find it. It's in every interaction. It's automatic. It's asserting people by, and actually, and it manages to do something in some ways that no other bad philosophies and theories have brought us. And then it's pretty much racist to everyone, because it only looks for people to behave and are locked into identity groups.
Well, I am getting close to out of time, but is there anything else in relation to, what you would do if you're if in the primary voters elect you to school board or something else that's important for voters to know about you?
That I pride myself on being the one in the room who raises their hand and asks the questions. That's what a lot of people have to do. You have to push, you have to look against when the group is doing something and it doesn't feel right. I will look for, I'm looking for calm outside now that the storm has ended, we've, and I'm looking to hear all voices out there, so if parents, I will look for reason and sanity and compassion in our decision making and our budgetary planning.
All right. Well, that was. Oh, I have one last question. Do you have I try to ask this of every candidate. You said you did not go to Spokane Public Schools. Do you have kids or family in the school system, or have worked or some affiliation with Spokane Public Schools?
Not Spokane Public Schools directly, no. Most of my extended family, my nieces, nephews, and they actually, my mother too, they're working in Grand Coulee Dam School District. They're affiliated with that. So no, this would be a new venture.
Okay. All right. Well, I think that was most of my questions. Thank you for your time.